Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday, March 11th edition of Byers & Company. State Senator Andy Menar will join us. We'll also check in with Dr. Valdez from Richland Community College and Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports, plus our countdown to opening day with Heinkels. All of that starts now.
Byers & Company, WSOY, 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Good morning and welcome. We are back here and it's starting to get a little light and I am so sick of gray and dark and wet, right? St. Patrick's Day parade this weekend. We'll have it here, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe not Chicago?
Maybe not.
I don't know. If I told you that fatal car crashes spike during the week after the clock springs forward, this is statistically a thing, and there's about 28 additional deaths every year this week after the clock changes. And since they've been studying this, more than 700 people have died. Isn't it weird, like, when you put those numbers and you lay it over the coronavirus numbers, like what we decide to get panicked about.
That's right.
And the dangers that we just sort of, like, accept every day in life. State Senator Andy Menar tried to make this a permanent thing. That has not worked out. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, I mean, I had no idea that you could directly correlate daylight savings time to a spike in automobile accidents that cause additional deaths.
Yeah. I mean, it goes to the heart of, and, you know, on the outset, I acknowledge there's reasons why daylight savings time was put in, but the bill that the Senate advanced that now appears to be stalled in the House, it's because of things like this. It's completely arbitrary. If you think about it, it's the government saying, you know, for these public policy reasons, we're just going to change the time. And that's what motivated me to file the bill. And this was one of those statistics. And I read that same report. I believe I read it on Monday of this week, which was an updated version of a report that I had read previous that was several years old. But, for example, suicides. There's a spike in suicides this week across the country. There's a spike in the number of strokes across the country. And that's all because of the change in someone's biological rhythm because of what is set into motion because of a change in the time.
Yeah, and the history of this isn't as far back as everyone thinks. We did a little bit of it during World War One and World War II, but the act itself, the Uniform Time Act, was signed into law the year I was born, 1966. So and before that, it was sort of left up to local and state governments for several years to make up their own decisions. So what happens next with this?
So it's pending in the House, and we're trying to get a bipartisan group of lawmakers to push for the first step, which is a public committee hearing on the bill. And it is early, relatively early in the process for Senate bills in the House. So it's kind of an oddity in terms of our process in Springfield. We passed it in the Senate back in veto session, which is kind of unusual. But I pushed to get it passed in the Senate before Sunday of this past week, so that individuals could be reminded that we should have the debate. And I would also just remind everyone, Brian, that's listening, that the bill, even if it were to pass by the House and signed by the governor, doesn't contemplate Illinois beyond an island. It essentially changes our state law so that if and when Congress, and I think it's just a matter of when, Congress adjusts the national law, our laws in place. And I believe there's now 16 other states that within the last 2 years, which is kind of a lot in a short amount of time, have passed something very similar or exactly similar to what the state Senate passed a few months ago.
All right. As a lawmaker, and I'm always a little leery of this, you know, every time something happens, somebody wants to run over to Springfield and have you guys put legislation in effect. And I think you can go too far with that. But I'm watching this whole coronavirus thing. I'm watching people in the drive-thru of a fast food restaurant with, you know, surgical masks on, even though heart disease is probably what's going to get them if you just do the math. How do you put all of it, balance all of it? And we have this irrational fear of some things and no fear of other things at all, which are far more likely to kill us.
I think you're right. And I think that goes to how society normalizes some things, or internalizes some things and doesn't see some things as a threat, but then other things, which, for example, COVID-19 is not normalized. And I think there's a heightened response that may, I would say reasonably, in some cases, isn't justified. I think in some cases it is. So you're right. I mean, the legislature exists to change laws. That's the purpose. And to constantly put laws under the microscope, because that's what we should do. We should be questioning what we do. It should also be very hard to change a law. And I would tell you it is. I mean, you can't just change a law in Springfield by snapping a finger. It should be difficult to do it. But in the case of what's happening now, I think we could draw all kinds of analogies to things that are literally life-threatening that I think many of us in society have just accepted. And then here's this new thing, which is the coronavirus, which is serious, right? I'm not saying it's not serious. But the response from the government and from many in the national media, I think, leaves me scratching my head a little bit. And again, I'm saying that, Brian, not to say it's not a serious issue. It is a serious issue.
But you're exactly right. Your chances of dying of influenza are still much, much greater, and they are every single year. 26,000 people have died of the flu this year.
Yeah, and I think the response to, at least from the briefings that we've received as state legislators, the response to this is different. And the nuanced differences, reason for the response, for example, compared to the flu or SARS or, pick one, they're valid reasons. But I think that gets completely lost in the national dialogue. So we see things, right? We see things every day. I see them too, like what you described in the drive-through window at a fast food restaurant.
Yeah, and I don't want to be cynical about it either. And I think we could be looking at maybe the potential cancellation of the NCAA tournament. I mean, honest to God, we might be doing opening day to empty stadiums. I have no idea. I'm reading stuff that in 10 days, hospitals are going to be overwhelmed. I don't know. Maybe all of that is true. But we have survived H1N1 and MERS and SARS and mad cow disease and Norwalk and Zika and influenza and AIDS, Lyme disease, West Nile. The media just loves this stuff. I turned on Netflix yesterday and Outbreak's trending number 4, the Dustin Hoffman movie, because we can't get enough of it. Evidently, we got to watch fictionalized versions of it.
Right, and it's not a very good movie, in my opinion.
No, I hate that movie theater scene.
Yeah, But I would tell you that I would also rather the government be overprepared than underprepared. But I, for example, think the state is doing incredibly good prep work. But that is very different than how the national media is covering the topic, and that coverage, especially on a national media, drives so much of the public policy debate today. And not just with coronavirus, with as you know, with any number of
and on both sides of the aisle, they got to quit playing politics with this thing. That is for sure. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what happens in a couple of weeks since you've been with us on the national stage, as far as the Democratic presidential primary is concerned. Are you a little stunned, a little amazed at where Joe Biden is sitting today versus a few weeks ago when we last talked?
You know, Brian, I was thinking about that interview actually before I dialed in into the studio this morning. And I think I'm going to admit this. I think that that what I had predicted was likely going to happen isn't happening. And I don't. That doesn't mean I'm bad at it. I think I'm in the same boat as most everybody else in those that were handicapping the Democratic primary. So yes, I am. I'm stunned. I mean, if you look at Vice President Biden's turnaround, it's stunning. It's stunning in American political history, what's happened. And it's not a done deal yet. It is not a done deal yet. But going from where he was just a few weeks ago, I think you could argue, 2.5 weeks ago, to where he is today after the contest last night, it is a stunning turnaround.
I think it's got very little to do with anything he has personally done. I think that the establishment of the Democratic Party said that's enough. They convinced Mayor Pete to start the domino game. That happened. all the way through Elizabeth Warren, who, although she hasn't officially endorsed him, a lot of her supporters have. I think you've got now a two-person race, not even really in my mind, because I think in Illinois, Joe Biden wins. I think in Florida, Joe Biden wins. You know, Bernie's running out of big states with lots of delegates where he has any opportunity. He won Michigan 4 years ago and lost it handily yesterday. And even with his young voters, Senator, I mean, he's getting the 18 to 29-year-olds. Mm-hmm. There's just not enough of them that are voting.
And look at Super Tuesday a week ago yesterday, and that statistic that you just mentioned, the statistics of the percent of the vote that were young voters, which is obviously part of the base, the structure of the Bernie Sanders coalition, those were not there. So when any candidate doesn't have a piece of their base vote turn out, that's going to present them challenges. And in this case, that statistic from Super Tuesday was stunning to me, because I did not expect that. The other one that has surprised me, and I think we saw this in Missouri yesterday, is the number of the percentage that Joe Biden was getting in exit polls of white, non-educated white, or, you know, I don't like the term working class, but that's the term that the national media uses. Those voters, Biden was pulling those voters away from Bernie, and clearly that was Bernie's strength in the primary against Hillary Clinton all over the country. So that's another statistic. So when you put those two things together, that spells, in this case, which is essentially a one-on-one race between Biden and Sanders, that spells success for Joe Biden.
Okay. Now, I take your Democrat hat off and just talk to me from a guy who's been around a lot of races. I thought CNN was offering the worst advice possible for Joe Biden, meaning that he is now in charge of bringing the party together. So he's got to go out and find all these Bernie bros and make them happy. A, that's never going to happen. And B, if there were enough of those Bernie bros, he would be winning Democratic primaries, not losing them by large numbers. Joe Biden's got to go right down the middle to get to the blue dog Democrats that voted for Trump, to get those folks back, instead of these 18 to 29 year olds aren't going to be there.
Yeah, I didn't see that, but I would not at this moment in time subscribe to that advice. And that doesn't mean it's not important to have a united Democratic Party going into a general election. It is.
You do have a united Democratic Party. You saw what happened when the Democratic Party gets together. They just totally decimated Bernie Sanders in a period of about 10 days. That's what happens when the party comes together. And what the Democrats said is, you know what? The socialists are not our party.
Yeah, and that was said in very, very big numbers. It was. So I think what Joe Biden has to do is continue to do what he's done, which has more so not been a state to state contest. You know, he's running a national primary right now. Joe Biden is, and that has proven to work to his advantage. Bernie's campaign has run a state to state primary strategy, which I think in many other years it would be successful. It was successful against Hillary Clinton, didn't win the nomination, but he ran a very successful campaign. But this is a different type of a race right now. And Biden's approach to run a national primary, to move people out, you know, to get them out of the way.
I just think I think this has very little to do with, I think Joe Biden's not even at the helm of the ship. I mean, I really don't. And I like the guy, I think this has got very little to do with anything he has planned or any strategy he has put into place. I think this is what it looks like when the Democratic Party unites and they say this guy has the best chance to beat Trump in November. So all hands on deck.
Yeah, that is clearly the selling point for Biden. And it's, you know, it's his it's his career, right? It's his career backs that up. What he did with President Obama obviously is very popular among almost all ranks in the Democratic Party. You couple that with the Sanders nomination and looking ahead to a contest against Trump. And I think that's why we see Joe Biden in the position that he's in today.
All right. Who does he look for VP if he's the guy?
You know, I think he has to look for an African American woman. I think that's I think that's probably where he starts. But you know, it's interesting that the Biden candidacy, if he becomes the nominee, which it appears he's going to be, is interesting because it presents, you know, it presents a very different type of candidacy in terms of a choice of a VP. Because again, I think Biden is a national candidate. He's not, you know, he wasn't created by one particular region of the state, or, you know, he wasn't put forward or advanced by one particular sector of the Democratic Party, he can appeal nationally. So I think that that's a different calculus. But he's clearly going to have someone who's younger and someone who can try to generate that type of support and enthusiasm among young voters. As an addition to things that he's already put together.
I guess. I think the young vote continues to be overrated in this country. If you look at the demographics, they really didn't show up en masse for President Obama. If there's enough of them out there, Bernie promised them everything, and they still didn't show up to vote. Joe Biden's getting 71% of the African-American vote in some of these places. I don't know. Younger, yeah, than the old white guy. I mean, I know that's the complaint. I mean, you guys are the big tent people. You're supposed to have everybody in it. And you guys give us two white dudes in their 70s to choose from. So that's an image. That's an optics thing with the Democratic Party now for sure. But I don't know who he picks. I was there anybody on that stage that you would point out? I mean, is it Kamala Harris? Is it Pete Buttigieg? And why in the hell is Tulsi Gabbard still around?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was shocked last night whenever I got home and turned on the TV to get updated on what was happening, and I didn't realize she was still in the race. And I guess that's me not paying attention as well as I should, but I didn't realize that she was. I would look at somebody like Cory Booker. I would look at someone like Senator Harris. I mean, those two individuals. And why I focus on African American is because look at Mississippi, Ryan. I mean, Biden won Mississippi with, I think, was it 82% of the vote?
Yes.
And look at what occurred in South Carolina, which was clearly the paradigm shift of what happened in South Carolina. And I think there's evidence in South Carolina of how electoral success is put together for the Biden candidacy, which, by the way, is very different than the electoral success for a Bernie Sanders candidacy in a general election. So that's why I focus on an African-American VP pick, because that is a core constituency, clearly, as evidenced by what's happened in the last 2 weeks now. That's a core constituency that we have to have going into the November election.
I think that part is absolutely correct. I think if he is forced to acquiesce to the far left progressives in your party, it is disastrous for him in the fall.
Yeah, I've said this a couple times now, but you know, his candidacy is, if you look at his media, his TV, you know, I see his TV because I get St. Louis TV in Bunker Hill. It's a national message, right? It's a national message. It's not one based on too many specific issues, and so that's what is so far in the last 2 weeks. And you know, we have to kind of stop and say it's only been 2 weeks, but it's a stunning turnaround.
No,
that's the message brought him forward.
He didn't have TV 2 weeks ago. He didn't have any money. It is stunning. Well, we'll see what happens, Senator. We appreciate you being with us. Are you worried about Election Day and the coronavirus? And I know people are having a hard time finding election judges. There have been polling places where there's been problems because no one wants to go to a nursing home, all that. What are you expecting in Illinois next Tuesday?
Well, I'm not overly concerned. I'm concerned, obviously, because I don't want it to impede anyone's desire and ability to vote. But we have a very good vote-by-mail program in Illinois. That has been I would point to that as a bipartisan success of our state. I voted by mail in the primary, and not because of the coronavirus. I just do because I never know where I'm going to be on election day. So I would just urge everyone to look at that option. That is a good option. It's very simple. It costs no money. And that was something that we've put in place now several election cycles. We've improved on it. And that's a good option for people.
All right, Senator, we appreciate it. Thank you very much, Senator Andy Menar. And, sure he, alongside everyone else, would tell you to get out and vote next Tuesday.
That's right.
Okay, and you could play those two interviews back to back, and it would be like, you would think there would be like 4 years of time between them.
Yeah.
I mean, not anything bad. Just here's what it looked like 3 weeks ago. Here's what it is today. And I don't think, I mean, it's like, wow.
Yeah, overnight almost.